Before I begin the sermon, I just want to thank Ethan Wood, our guest musician this morning. It's lovely to have you. Last Saturday afternoon, I went to an HD live performance of Rusalka, an opera by Antonin Dvorak. It's a love story about a water nymph who falls in love with a prince. She begs the wicked witch of the woods to turn her into a human so she can be with him. And the witch says she will do it, but she demands a price in return. If the prince kisses Rusalka, he will die. Rusalka accepts the bargain, and despite her dire warnings, the handsome prince tells her he would rather die from one kiss than live desiring her for the rest of his life. And so they kiss, and he dies. And then she, heartbroken and grief-stricken, returns to the watery underworld. Love does not always run smoothly, not even when Renee Fleming is singing all the love songs. I'm going to tell you another story. This one is not from an opera. It was written by two therapists. It's about love and differences, and it may be familiar to you. It's called Cognitive Styles and Marital Process, or Some Fabled Characters Meet Again. Once upon a time, a fox and a hedgehog met in a forest glen. The hedgehog was delighted and enamored by the graceful and quick movements of the fox, who seemed so full of fun. And the fox was delighted that he had found in the hedgehog an appreciative audience, one who was always there when he returned from his forays. The hedgehog told the fox that he brought excitement into her life, and the fox told the hedgehog that she brought stability into his. Secretly, however, the hedgehog thought that in time she could probably get the fox to quiet down a bit and be calmer, and the fox thought that surely he could get the hedgehog to speed up, dance a little, and join him in the hunt. And so, acting on their delight and harboring these secret wishes, they got married. And as time went on, the initial delight they had first taken in their differences began to turn into disappointment as the hedgehog fretted about the fox's impulsiveness and the fox felt dragged down by the hedgehog's slow and plodding ways. They began to argue, each blaming the other for their mutual problems, saying not nice things about the other's family and way of being. Eventually, they decided to seek counseling, someone who would come highly recommended. And right away, they each tried to get the counselor to understand what the problem was with the other one. "Tell me," said the counselor as he turned to the hedgehog, "are you the type of creature who watches and plans carefully, considering each step and acts methodically?" "Yes," said the hedgehog. "Well then, you are a true hedgehog." "And are you," the counselor said to the fox, "able to keep your mind's eye on many different rabbit holes and mouse holes, knowing where each one is?" "Yes," said the fox, "that's me." Well, by now, the fox and the hedgehog were beginning to catch on. "But what do we do?" they asked. The counselor explained she could help them find ways to recognize and respect each other's differences, and to making a commitment not just with each other, but also to a process with one another. And so they did. This fable is a very human story. It happens all the time. The fox and the hedgehog had fallen in love, romantic love, and then had fallen out of that very same romantic love. How does that happen? And why don't those initial feelings of infatuation and adoration that come with falling in love last forever. Psychologists explain it this way. Falling in love, they say, is actually a temporary collapse of ego boundaries as we fall back into that infantile state we experienced as newborns, where for those first few months, we sense ourselves as one with the universe. There is a sudden release of oneself from oneself, an explosive outpouring of oneself into the beloved, and the dramatic ceasing of loneliness and separateness, enabling us to feel that we and our beloved are one. And therein lies the ecstasy, no longer separate, alone, and vulnerable. Two people, or a fox and a hedgehog, fall in love, merging together into that bliss of oneness, but not for long. Just as the fox and the hedgehog each had his and her own way of being, we too are uniquely ourselves with our own tastes and talents and ideas and needs, and sooner or later, all of those qualities that make us the unique people we are reappear and the bliss of oneness fades. The boundaries that frame our individuality snap back into place. I'm sure many of us have our own stories about blissful oneness and then returning boundaries. When my husband and I met 45 years ago, I knew I had fallen in love because I was so happy sitting next to him watching the Red Sox, the Celtics, and the Bruins. In fact, I watched so many games that year in 1970, I could name almost every player on each of the teams. What could be more wonderful than sitting on the couch next to my beloved watching professional sports? I can't remember exactly when, but I know it wasn't very long after we were married when my enthusiasm for that particular shared activity waned dramatically. I didn't know about the theory of collapsing ego boundaries back then, but I did feel the bliss and the oneness. But alas, just like the fox and the hedgehog, we also were two separate people needing to learn how to respect and navigate differences. Another story. This is a true story about psychologists who grouped 100 people according to their Myers-Briggs types and then asked them to define love. Depending on the groupings, the answers ranged from love is commitment, to love is an inner feeling, to love is what you do, to love is feeling as though you belong. And then they divided the group into just two sections of extroverts and introverts and asked them, how do you know when you're loved? The introvert said, you know you're loved when your need for privacy is respected, when you're given freedom and space, when your individuality is appreciated, and when you feel supported. And the extrovert said, you know you're loved when they tell you and send flowers and give gifts and make you laugh and make eye contact, touch you, write, send cards, and call you. Could the understandings be more different? An extrovert wants physical evidence of love, and the introvert needs space an appreciation of who and how he or she is. One of the questions I ask couples in planning their weddings is to tell me in what ways they are different, especially in terms of attitudes towards money and religion, politics, and family of origin norms. And I also ask what their idea of a relaxing evening might be. Is it getting together with friends, going out, having a party? Or is it a quiet night at home, doing nothing, being alone? Whether couples are similar in temperament, outlook, attitudes, and beliefs, or whether they are together as a result of the attraction of opposites, we know that all relationships take work and need tending and caring. If you're a fan of Modern Love, the weekly column that appears in the New York Times Sunday Styles section, you may have read the article that appeared 2 weeks ago about how people keep or don't keep alive the spark in long committed relationships. Having read approximately 50,000 stories that people have sent him through the years, hoping to get published, editor Dan Jones says that people seem to wrestle with two questions above all: how to find love and how to get it back. He believes that relationships of 20, 30, 40 plus years, long, long after that bliss has faded, do best when partners become appreciatively resigned, not dwelling on one they don't have, but rather counting their mutual blessings, from the exchange of kind gestures to pursuit of mutual interests to sharing a satisfying history and good memories, and most important of all, a sense of humor. While I admit it's worth a moment's fantasy to imagine a prince willing to die for a kiss, my ideal would be closer to resigned appreciation and the story that David read about the couple writing notes to each other in the margins of an award-winning novel. I think this idea of being appreciatively resigned is a very good approach, not just for love, but for life too. We do not have perfect lives. We live lives that ask sacrifice and compromise, and sometimes we just have to make do. And we can choose to dwell on what's missing, what we wish we had, or we can choose to appreciate and celebrate the life we do have, finding people and things to love along the way. A colleague, the Reverend Mark Morrison Reed, says it well in his poem on death when he wrote, "Let me die recalling that I tried to love and was loved in return. Let me die remembering that life has been good and that I did what I could. But today, just remind me that I am dying so that I can live, savor, and love with all my heart." So may it be. Amen.